Ja, alle med på sista raden där också.
Jättebra.
Vi ska göra lite high-tech idag. Vi har tre talare. En som står här, Curtis. Vi kommer att ha Patrick, som fortfarande sover. Han kommer från Washington. Nu är det nästan klockan 5 på morgonen där. Så han kommer vara med. Och sen kommer vi att ha Peter Koch från Tyskland på den sidan. Vi tänkte ju testa det lite grann. Vi måste tänka på klimat och allt sånt och CO2-utsläpp. Så vi ska ha en dubbel Skype och Curtis idag. Det som vi gör, vi börjar med Kurt-Erik Lindqvist. Sen tar vi 5 minuter bensträckare för att väcka våra utländska gäster. Och när vi säger att det funkar så kommer vi tillbaka och fortsätter. Är det okej?
Jag byter ut.
Bra. Jag tänkte, jag kan börja med lite inledning då. Varje år i början av säsongen så gör vi en bedömning vad som är intressant för internetdagar. Och en av de saker som vi tyckte var väldigt intressant att ta upp, det var egentligen efter att Rod Bäckström gick in i ett GAC-möte och började skrämma våra regeringar och säga att nu går det fel, nu håller det på att fallera, DNS är under attack och snart kommer det att säga god pipan. Jag vet inte om någon av er var med då. Är det någon representant här? Men han gjorde inte så många vänner där. För alla tyckte, vad är det här? Vad baserar du det på? Har vi missat någonting att DNS ska fallera snart? Och vilken information har du som vi inte har? Och det var lite utspel, tyckte vi, från hans sidan, för att han hade en fantastisk lösning också på en gång. Det är att ICANN skulle börja vara en global DNS-cert-organisation. Och på det sättet skulle vi kunna lösa det fantastiska hotet som fanns. Så det var egentligen embryo till det som vi ska prata om här. Vi har då Patrick Jones från ICANN som kommer med och han kommer berätta om ICANNs motivation och hur de ser hoten på nätet och varför de tror en DNS-cert behövs. Oj, det är många som kommer där. Kanske det finns några stolar i hörnet där borta. Ska vi vänta lite? Nu måste ni sitta skrämmande nära varandra. Eller hur? Nu blir det mysigt. I Holland skulle vi kalla det här gesellig. Finns platser där borta? Ja, ni har missat inledningen och jag kan säga det en gång till. Vi hade tänkt att ta upp When DNS Fails på grund av att ICANN började visa väldigt stora intresse för att sätta igång en global DNS-cert-organisation för att lösa det stora hotet på nätet som finns. Så vi har Patrick Jones från ICANN som kommer att berätta det. Vi har Peter Koch som jobbar på DNIC. Så det är världens största landsdomän, tyska CCTLD. Det intressanta med Peter Koch är också att jag tror årets största failure av en DNS var i Tyskland. Dagen innan pingstafton, tror jag, så gick det någonting fel. Jag har lovat att det inte är stora temat idag. De är fortfarande lite bekymrat när de måste prata om det. Men det är inget fel om någon i publiken ställer som fråga vad som hände i Tyskland. Så kan jag hålla mitt löfte och ändå kan vi diskutera det. Men låt oss börja med Curtis.
Peter. So I'll do the slides in English so that Danny can follow. No, but and also so that Patrick, when he joins afterwards, can go look at a recording and see what actually is said about him. So those of you who might not know me, I work for a company called NetNode. We run the exchanges in Sweden. We run one of the 13 DNS root servers, and we also run Anycasting or slave service for, in total, around 60 top-level domains in the world. So of which 30 are, roughly 30 are Anycasted. I was actually in this ICANN meeting that Danny was talking about. I was in Nairobi, and I heard some of the remarks made. Before I joined NetNode, I also worked in operations for a large operator. So I spent most of my life working in operational environment and trying to make the internet work. And I like the title of the seminar because I think there's one first reflection that you have to do, and that is that if we look at this at the topic at hand, DNS will fail, and so will BGP, SIP, the web, and DNS. All of these are protocols or uses we have today, they will all fail. And Daniel said we had a failure in DE, there was a failure in .se, that .se made a very good thing of actually publishing what happened. And we see a failure in the routing system, we see a failure in major web services. We had the Facebook down for 2 hours, and we saw 20% of the world's traffic gone when Facebook died. So we have all these failures all the time in all of these protocols. They're not in any way restricted to the DNS. And the only thing you'll see at a user is you get to this web page and it says 404 or it just stalls and you click reload and reload and reload and nothing happens. The job for us as the infrastructure providers and for you in the audience and for our competitors and corporate partners and .sc and so on is to make sure that, one, the users actually understand what happens. And second, to make sure it happens as little as possible and that it is as stable and robust as you can possibly make it. The DNS is a highly critical part of the internet. And I just want to say this because for the rest of my presentation, you might think I don't believe that, but it is. But I don't think that DNS is much more critical than all the other components in the internet. And I'll try to argue that point again. Why is this important? Well, the internet today is the authoritative source of information. That's where most people go when there is major breaking news events, when there is disasters, etc. We all turn to the internet to get information in real time what's happening. The DNS, though, is also a highly distributed system, and all of these distributed components needs to work, and they have to be consistent and provide the same authoritative information. That is not unique for the DNS either, by the way. The same goes for routing. The same goes for other systems that are the underlying components that makes this work. In case you don't know how the DNS works, I just want to make a short, very, very simplified picture. I'm sitting here with my laptop. I talk to something called a resolver that's normally run by your provider. And this resolver will go and traverse the DNS hierarchy and get responses in order to find the IP address of that site you want to go visit. All of the boxes here and the transport between them has to work for you to get to that page. The resolver here has the box in the middle, has the feature that actually caches these responses. And so even if I don't go and ask this every time, I ask this when I don't have the response in store. So when you see all of these parts, you might think that, this is quite complex. How will you know this is something breaks? I have said in the part that in the past that I think that the DNS is one of the most overanalyzed, overprotected parts of the internet. There is few things on the internet we know so well exactly when it happens, what happened in the past. And actually, I wish that we spent as much time and effort to securing the rest of the internet infrastructure, and we don't. So does anyone actually care? This is a service done by the RIPE NCC called DNSMON, and from 70-something, whatever point it is. Around the world, they look at a number of zones that either pay them or get this for free as the root zone I'm looking at here, and they see how is the performance towards these servers, and how does each server or each TLD actually operate. In this case, you see all the 13 root servers, and you can see that from the RIPE probes, there is some latency to some of them, but there is some missing data, the white dots, But it's green, it works. This is a good day. This is this morning when Danny was talking. Other days, there have been red dots here. The good thing with the internet is that it continues to work. Because of the, as long as I can get to one of these 13 servers, the internet will work. Most of the time. This is the Vatican.va. They also get this monitoring service, and you'll see that they actually have each of these name servers. They have a lot more. I just picked the first three ones. And you can see that Ripe can reach all of them, and people are monitoring them. Now, we do this for 25 countries. Anycast, let me do it for even more, if for just single service. And I can assure you that the moment anything here turns red, they will call us, or someone will call us, or mail us. We get emails from people we've never heard of, have no relationship to us, saying, I noticed that there is a red dot on one of the lines. You must be doing something wrong. The problem is that we might not be doing something wrong. It might also be a transient problem between us and a measurement probe. And this is part of the complexity. We can go and trace this. We can go and investigate and see what happens. We can try to make this as stable as we can because we have the knowledge, the tools, and the contacts. We're a very specialized company. We have spent years, all of us, working in this industry. We built up connections around the world. We go around to the conferences to make sure that we have these personal first-hand contacts so that when the DNS fails, in this case, we can contact someone or we can make a fairly educated guess what actually happened. Now, this is not something that happens overnight. You build trust, you build experience, and you can go look at this. Notice that there's a red dot here. At this point, this particular probe could not reach one of the servers of the Vatican. Now, the Vatican might not be the largest top-level domain in the world, but it's a top-level domain, and I'm sure that all the 130 inhabitants of the Vatican thinks it's very useful. But the interesting part here is, again, these blips, as long as there's only one of them, doesn't actually affect the service. You can see there's even more on the other ones. And I actually noticed that all these blips are similar, so probably this probe had a local connectivity issue. I can see that because I can see the correlation. I can actually go and look at other tools, and I'll see more correlation. I can deem that this was not a fault with us. It was a fault with the transit provider. To make sure that these effects are limited, what the root servers have done is that we did something called Anycast. We originally had 13 servers in 13 unique locations around the world. Today, I think there's over 300. Does it say on the slide? It doesn't. These are all the locations where we have root servers. Now, there is a few things to be said about this. I don't think Western Europe needs more. That's one. I do think there are other parts of the world, and I'm not necessarily thinking of Eastern Russia, but there are other parts of the world who do need servers. And actually, I think Eastern Russia is one of those regions. And so is Africa, and so is South America. Now, building these services out and putting these servers in and doing this infrastructure build-out is something that will help that internet become a lot more stable, secure, and robust. And it will also help the DNS. It will also make sure that the DNS doesn't fail. All of this is infrastructure protection. We put these servers up, we make sure that people can have local access to them, and most of these people who run these, including us and VeriSign and other people, also run Anycasting for TLDs. So when we do this, when you see the eyes here, which is us, there's actually an eye here, I don't know why it doesn't, oh, there it is, sorry. Here's one eye, Sri Lanka. When we put that server out there, they also get 30 TLDs. That means that when it got cut off from the world, and this has happened, one case was we had a few years ago, if you remember, we had sea cable cuts. Two cables leaving Alexandria got cut at the same time as the CMEV cable who goes, or actually Falcon cable who goes here got cut. That meant that a large part of the Middle East was actually isolated or had very little bandwidth. But they actually had a fairly good working DNS because they had a few Anycasted copies and they had TLDs, and actually they could continue to work, at least for their own country domains. This type of work is what actually makes the DNS secure, if you ask me. I'll get back to what kind of work might not make it secure. All this started in 2003 because there was a DDoS attack against most of the root servers, and we realized that if we distributed these servers as we do, one, there was some political pressure to do so. Second, we could distribute the attack traffic on more locations and keep the attacks more localized, meaning that we didn't take out all the regions at the same time, only the regions that got hit by the DDoS attack. The root servers have a few properties. And they are designed, again, to make the DNS as reliable as possible. We're a diverse set of operators. We don't have a formal way of we do coordinate on some technical parameters, but we're standalone organizations. We have equipment. We have a diverse set of equipment, diverse set of software, and there's a diverse set of operational groups and practices who run this. So if there's a bug or a security hole in any of these, we still have a fairly chance to avoid it. Now, that said, there's only two types of servers used, as far as I know, for... there we go. I like hashtags, too. And hashtags, of course, the next DNS name. So all we're talking about the DNS is useless. We should be talking about protecting the hashtags. Anyway, the problem here is, though, that there's not that many server software to pick from, so we are still a bit limited. We do also have a diverse set of authority. All the organizations have different types of organizations, different types of structures. Same goes for the TLDs, to a large extent. They have a diverse set of registrars, mostly. A few of them run more than one TLD. They have a diverse set of slave servers, mostly. Some of them use only one, but that's their choice. But they also run all the other features of being diverse in many ways. But, so, if you look at the slave servers and the root servers, etc., I think that part of the DNS infrastructure is pretty well covered. Still, we do see failures. We have had, I don't think we have had a root server failure in a very long time, except a few weeks ago, when one of the root servers got flooded by the hurricanes, and they actually had to shut down. They had spent a fortune to build a very nice underground facility for the root server that got water filled. Anyway, the same goes for the TLDs. We've seen .se fail, we've seen the DE fail, we've seen .uk and .be fail recently. All of these were actually what I would describe as manual operational mistakes. There was no automated system as far as, well, Danny can correct me if I'm wrong for .se, but from what I know about these incidents, there was very little we could have done to prevent it. In hindsight, it's very easy to say, oh, you should have built in a system to verify this and that, and that's true. But they were actually quite hard to catch faults when it happened. And these things will happen. There will be manual mistakes being made. And I just named a few of the recent year that have failed. And if you look at them, they are all Western European, highly well-funded, and very clueful. And they still make mistakes. And we make mistakes too. There's no secret. Well, I haven't done a mistake in DNS yet, but I have done a few years ago. I did announce ISC, who runs BIDE, etc. I did manage to announce their IPv6 prefix instead of our own and took out reachability for all of their FTP sites, which challenged people's download capability. People do these mistakes, and so do I. The good news, though, is that people are watching these events, too, already, but you don't know about it. And this thing about the fact that we don't believe that anyone is taking care or watching, I actually believe is one of the greatest threats currently. Because this leads to having regulators who believe that as there is no insight into this, we must regulate. That's their job. They want to have a job too, right? We have a problem with lawmakers. They believe that they will be held accountable if something goes wrong. So therefore, if they make laws, they're not accountable and therefore everything is fine. And this list goes on. And I mean, there are a few interesting observations here. There is a working group inside the European Commission that looks at critical infrastructure protection. And I'm one of the people who goes to these meetings. We usually between 60 and 70 people. Two of us have operational background. It's me and a guy from British Telecom. Everyone else in there is a vendor. Their business is to sell things. Do you think they actually truly care about the infrastructure? Or do you think they care about the revenue? I'm being really mean here, but I know, nothing bad about vendors. Vendors are nice too. And a lot of this comes from that one of these interesting discussions about this, the people watching is that we do know a lot about things that happens on the internet, about malware. We do a lot about who actually controls them. And we know quite a bit about these events, but we can't share it because that would be leaking information to the people who actually want to know how we found out and what did we know. So a lot of these discussions are actually held in very, very close circles. And another thing is that you only share this with people who have that you trust. I made a joke last night in a bar that When I was at the European Commission, there was a guy there who works for a member state's intelligence services, and he was very concerned that they had no insight into the sharing of knowledge. And I said, well, look, if you trust me, then why don't you share your intelligence, that your military intelligence with me? Because you trust me, then we can share both ways, right? And he says, there's no way we can share our military intelligence with you. I said, well, I'm not going to share any data with you either because I don't trust you. I think you got the message. But there is a lot of these very close-knit groups, and governments do have some insight to them, but it's not very visible, even inside the governments. Or in other organizations, by the way. I'm picking on governments here, but to come to Danny's point about DNS cert, one other point is also that in these groups and focus people, and maybe some of the stakeholders, the registrars, doesn't have this insight either, because they have no operational data to share. So does anyone care? Yes, this is another cool BGP, or another cool tool by the RIPE Institute that monitors BGP activity. It does the same as you do for the DNS, but it does it for the BGP. And we use this to look at events that happens. And these events do happen. We have several times had our prefixes announced by other people. For a long time, there was an IRUT server located in Hungary. We don't have a site in Hungary. But we can work this down and we can find these sites. So when these bad things do happen, we can actually work inside these environments. And we are actually part of this. We work together with the various country certs, with the Swedish one, with the Finnish ones, with the other ones. We also work very closely with these operators that we have built up trust with. And this is true for all the other providers of similar services. And we have done this working on both DDoS attacks. We are more or less constantly under DDoS attack of varying degrees and sizes. And we do see RAD hijacks quite frequently, that people want to have their own RAD server or root server. And some of them are done by mistake, people who don't understand better, because they believe that this anycasting was a bit that everybody could do it. And we also see very powerful organizations tied to nation states who do this and cause some problems. What do we need to do? I think that if you're going to look at what you can do to help this system function better and more secure, instead of trying to create a dedicated entity, as the DNS cert, as Danny mentioned, that will divert focus from understanding the system and understanding all the dependencies to even more overanalyze DNS. Instead, we should make sure that we have a broader knowledge about how this works, educate the end users, deploy DNSSEC to protect against some of the most obvious attacks. And when I say deploy DNSSEC, the easy part here is to get your TLD signed. The hard part is to get it used. You need someone to validate this. You need to have secondary domains signed, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot of work that needs to be done there. Training on government and the agencies, and actually I think this is one of the most key things, to make government and the agencies, and maybe to some extent ICANN itself, understand how this works and what is in place today. ISOC, the international ISOC chapter, does a great job. They do CISO-TLD trainings for developing countries to help them build CISO-TLDs and to learn this. And here we should include, why don't we do the same thing for CERTs? There's this argument saying that, oh, the CERTs of the world are too few, they're not in the right place, and they don't know DNS. Well, why don't we solve that problem rather than building up a completely parallel structure, again, to duplicate all the work, to duplicate the trust relations, and do this work. Roy Ahrens, who works with Nominate, the UK TLD, had this great comment when we were in Nairobi when he said, a CERT means that I give away authority to them over my own networks and my resources. I do that because I know them and I trust them, and I have a community who gave them that authority. You can't create this by decree. This comes from working with them and working very, very hard. And if you don't do that, it's going to fail. So doing a lot more work, and I think this is, I have to blame myself and Danny as much as anyone else for not working closer with the agencies, the CERT and the DNS community, the security community, to make sure this is more understood how this actually works and how we operationally work with these issues. And this is not unique to DNS, by the way. This goes for all security work. And then last, I thought I'll be a bit provocative as I've been so nice so far. There are forces working to make sure that the DNS fails. There is DNS-based filtering already today. You might have noticed, and I'd rather not take any questions on this afterwards, but as you might have known, we had a small incident earlier this year when queries to a particular iRoot instance were returning incorrect responses. We actually responded correctly, but responses seen by the end users were wrong. We got criticized publicly for not talking very much about this, and we were basically accused of doing censoring. What you have to realize is that basically every single DNS query in Europe today is censored in one way or the other. All European countries do DNS filtering in one way or the other, for child pornography primarily, and in some countries for other things too. So, and this is, I'm not going to make a value judgment here, but people are working on making sure that there are false DNS responses out there. We can think about if that increases or decreases stability of the DNS. And there is also, in some parts of the world, quite a lot of discussion about regulating DNS and the operation of DNS. And I understand that if you don't know, you like to regulate, but I also think we have to be very careful here to make sure that this does not become the weak point and creates more instability. And that was my 20 minutes and 18 seconds. That wasn't so bad for being 20 minutes.
Okay, as we said before, we take a 5-minute break to wake up our...
Do you want to do any direct questions, or do you want to do questions?
We can have some questions. I can have a question.
Okay.
You talked about China without saying China.
Maybe.
But could you explain a bit more what happened
in what could be China?
So, as you might have known, there was a report on a mailing list. There was a report to us directly as well, and a bit more work behind the scenes, that if you send queries to our iRoot node in Beijing for particular strings, you got a negative answer back, and it's the main back. CNNIC, who is our host, verified that we did answer the queries correctly. Now, I'm going to leave your imagination to why the clients got this. I mean, part of the reason is that I do not want to speak on behalf of someone else. I can only speak for what we did and what we saw. I don't want to make statements on behalf of other organizations, which is why I'm a bit vague here. But as far as we know, we know that we answered correctly. This was actually a very interesting problem to debug, because virtually the only places we could find that saw the incorrect response was the ICANN offices in California and Chile. And this has, again, more to do with routing topology. We actually, there was some industry reports this summer by Renesis. Renesis claimed that we had leaked the route intentionally globally. First of all, this route, the access to the Beijing server had always been a global node. This was installed in 2006 and has been taking queries from all around the world all these years. Renesis, who specializes in detecting routing data, had never seen this route global for some reason that we don't know. And I think that this probably says more about Renesis data than about reality, but we saw queries from around the world going to this node all the time. It was true that we started, and also when these queries, when the incorrect responses were being seen, from other parts of the world, if you query the same server, you got a correct response. So there's a very, very particular path that had an issue. And it was quite hard to debug this or detect this, but mostly what we were actually seeing was an anomaly of BGP, and why Chile and especially California ended up selecting a node in Beijing. It's quite complex to explain this about how BGP and the route selection works, but this is part of the problem of building a robust system on the internet, right? That you get these very odd node selections. But that's basically as much as I want to say and can say. Any other questions? Yeah, Francesco. Yes. I can give you a microphone too.
All right, my name is Francesco Cetraro, and I work for the .mobi registry. You probably saw there was an article, I think, earlier last week about Comcast saying that now that DNSSEC is getting deployed, they will stop basically hijacking NX domain responses and serving ads. Like, it's quite a lot of ISPs that do that. Companies like OpenDNS built a business around having that. Now, running and resolving DNS, it's a lost business, right? You cannot charge extra for that. So my question is, by deploying DNSSEC that is supposed to make the internet safe, are we giving them a less of an incentive in running a good resolving system and then ending up in a similar situation, even worse probably?
I think that DNSSEC solves many problems, right? And one of the things that I think is nice is that if you look at how people around the world today does DNS-based filtering, it won't be possible to do that anymore, which I think is a good thing, by the way. Don't get me wrong. I think that's a fantastic thing. When it comes to the companies that have built business cases around doing this, I mean, if they go out of business, my heart is really broken for them. If that was a question, how do this... Okay.
The question was more, if some of them go out of business, fine, but doesn't it give the ISPs less of an incentive in maintaining a good infrastructure?
If it gives the ISPs less incentive to maintain a good infrastructure, no, because they still have to make sure this works. And actually, if you look at what the companies have done for a solver infrastructure for a long time, they have actually made a lot of work in this. Actually, I think, well, Danny is here somewhere. And when he was at Quest, I think Quest was the first people who actually anycasted resolvers inside the network. Is that right, Danny? Okay, in an MCI anyway. It was one of the two. And I think ever since then, ISPs have actually deployed a lot of work into making sure the resolving infrastructure works. And the ISP is also, again, I'm not sure about the setting, but the ISP is also use the resolver data to track other problems in their network. And that's very important to keep in mind is that the resolver logs and resolver data is actually very useful to the operators. So I do think that the incentive doesn't go away. On the contrary, they have other motives to making sure this works. Any other questions?
Okay, then we'll take a 5-minute break to get the two Skype speakers online. You can sit or talk or mingle for a while.
Så att han börjar prata med ljudet och sen under tiden försöker vi gå det försöker vi få
presentationen. Ja, presentationen kan vi få, men ljudet har vi svårt att få på samma system.
Ja, men det viktigaste är att man kan lyssna på honom.
Man kan lyssna på honom.
Tycker jag det är det viktigaste.
Då kan vi växla ljudet, då kan vi byta presentationen och växla den på den skärmen där.
Ja, det är också okej.
Okay. Ja.
Ja, kan ni göra det under tiden han pratar?
Ja, det kan vi göra.
För då låter jag be honom att sätta igång presentationen.
Då visar vi presentationen. Då hörs ljudet, men presentationen syns där borta och inte här.
Ja, det är helt okej.
Okej.
Ja. Så då börjar vi.
We can make one more test. Yeah, there we have it. Yeah, it works. So, 2 minutes, we'll start in 2 minutes.
Okay.
All right.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
It's now nearly 6 o'clock a.m. for you, or not?
Yes.
And sorry for the delay, but we had some minor problem getting the volume up here in the room. I would like you to start the presentation. I know that you have a family to take care of also. So we'll start with only your voice, and during the presentation, the next couple of minutes, we will get your presentation up and running on another screen, but I think it's more important that people can hear you. Is that fine with you?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Okay, but one thing, when you do your presentation, please say next slide if you want us to change the slide.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you for inviting me to present this morning. I really wish that I was there in person. It looks like you have a great set of sessions and speakers and events. When I saw the title of this session, When the DNS Fails, I was a little nervous because I hope that as the work across the community to prevent the DNS from failure, that we continue to work together in a collaborative way, and that we're far from that happening. So whenever my slides are ready, I want to set a baseline for what ICANN's role in the space. And we'll start from there to talk about our activities in security, stability, and resiliency.
The slides are ready.
Can you hear me fine?
Yes, and the slides are ready.
Okay. So I'm ready for slide two, which should stay at the top, security, stability, and resiliency, SSR.
Yes, it's on.
Okay. So as a baseline, security, stability, and resiliency, the security and stability of the domain name system is an important priority for ICANN and for the community and for internet users globally. This forms the core elements of ICANN's mission. The misuse of and attacks against the DNS and other internet infrastructure have been steadily increasing. So to ensure that this crucial work goes on, ICANN must work in partnership with others involved in the broader aspect of these issues. So from our fiscal year 10 to 13 strategic plan, SSR is one of the four main areas. And these are some of the main areas that are going to be very closely reviewed in the affirmation of commitments review that is going to be starting this month. If you go to the next slide, this will show a snapshot of our strategic plan. And some of this will look familiar, and it shows that DNS stability and security is one of the main areas. And we have the work divided up into strategic objectives, community work, strategic projects, and staff work. I think we have quite a ways to go in being able to show how the strategic objectives are being accomplished. I'm hopeful that the work that ICANN has been doing around its security, stability, and resiliency plan that we have out for comment will help provide some context into what our major projects and initiatives are in this area, as well as the work that's underway in the community to implement protocols like DNSSEC, advance the work on internationalization of who is, continue to work on the applicant guidebook for new top-level domains, and the the continuing use of the internationalized domain names fast-track process for ccTLDs. If you go to the next slide, this shows that ICANN's role is to collaborate with the community in the coordination of the DNS for the public benefit. And this is to work in accordance with its bylaws, focus on its core mission related to the internet's unique identifier systems, and participate in activities with the broader internet community. This is regularly updated in our work related to our SSR plan and also emerging work on threats to the DNS. If you look at the next slide, this shows a series of activities in this area. ICANN's work in this space goes back quite a few years. November 2001, there was a ICANN meeting focused solely on security issues. And out of that, in 2002, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee was formed. Over the years, there have been issues around wildcards, synthesized domain responses, response against denial of service attacks, either against registries, registrars, root operators, and other organizations. There have also been responses to large-scale registrar terminations and failures, which has resulted in our work with the community on developing a gTLD registry failover program, which has evolved into continuity exercises over the last 4 years. And then more recently, work on bringing together experts from the security community, DNS operators and experts, people from the law enforcement and government perspectives, to have a global symposium on the domain name system security and stability and resiliency efforts. The first one was done in February of 2009 at Georgia Tech University. The second one was this past February in Kyoto at Kyoto University in Japan. The next slide. And well, before we go on, just to note that out of the two symposiums, one of the issues that was raised was that there's been a lack of awareness and skill training on information sharing and incident response capabilities should be improved. One of the suggestions was to have a DNS cert as a potential solution. I know that's controversial, and I will talk about that in the next couple slides. So if you move on, you should get a slide titled Threats and Risks to the System. And this is just an overview of some of the threats that the system has been seeing, such as a large-scale denial of service attacks, cyber attacks, particularly the Estonia example from 3 years ago, Configure in Zeus, which is use of botnets to leverage the system for malicious activity, as well as a growth in social engineering attacks, URL shortener attacks. I think some of the other presenters may be talking about issues involving routing. And then we're starting to see new uses such as the Stuxnet virus and worm. And there have also been issues around natural disasters, particularly the recent large-scale earthquake in Haiti. And so it's within this context that Rod Rexstrom, ICANN CEO, made his comments during the ICANN meeting in Nairobi, Kenya, which has generated quite a bit of discussion for us and within the ICANN community over the last 6 months. The next slide, I'm going to talk briefly about the strategic initiatives. So in February of 2010, ICANN published a strategic initiatives paper. This included two things, an overview of a community-based approach to a system-wide DNS risk assessment, as well as the global business case for a DNS cert. ICANN conducted a workshop in Washington, D.C. in April of 2010 to look at operational requirements and what types of collaboration might be necessary to advance the concept further. Out of that, we published a very thorough summary and analysis of the comments and then conducted a number of consultations with the community at the ICANN meeting in Brussels in June. There's been very little comment about conducting a community-based risk assessment, and this builds on other work that's underway or it's been done over the last couple of years about DNS risks. The next slide on the DNS cert, you know, this was envisioned to provide proactive and reactive services to enable time and efficient response to threats to the security, stability, resiliency of the DNS. This has involved a number of things, such as having threat analysis, monitoring, incident handling coordination, and support to the resource-constrained community, and also to improve communication within the DNS operational community. This has generated a lot of feedback. Let's go to the next slide. The community has been pretty clear that ICANN needs to do more work before advancing a DNS cert. I have picked out a couple quotes from some of the comments that were received. The first one I've included in the slide, that the requirements for a DNS cert must be analyzed in light of deeper understanding of the threats and risks to the DNS, and that such analysis should precede specific proposals for a DNS cert. In addition, the United Kingdom representative included a pretty good suggestion that key areas going forward must look at better understanding emerging threats, understanding how those threats translate to risk for DNS operators and users, improve the ability for information to be shared, and create a culture of emergency preparedness in the DNS community, and promote tests of contingency plans. We've heard pretty clearly from not just the ccTLD community, but from a broad spectrum of others, that there's more work to be done. And from a staff perspective, we tried to make it pretty clear at the ICANN meeting in Brussels, our work is to support the community. Next slide. We're supporting a community-led discussion that's underway in a new working group. It's called the Joint Security, Stability, and Analysis Working Group. It's comprised of representatives from the at-large community, Country Code, it's from the CCNSO, from the generic names supporting organization, and I expect there will be other experts as well that will join this group. There's also there was a birds of a feather discussion in Brussels on needs for collaborative capabilities and how the community might take a DNS cert tech concept going forward. From the staff side, we're also looking at doing the risk assessment side, and I think that's something that, you know, having more data before this discussion goes forward would be helpful. ICANN's not pushing to operate a DNS cert, and at this time, staff is working to support community efforts. So the next slide is a look ahead. We have the ICANN meeting coming up in Cartagena, Colombia. There will be more discussions, I'm certain. The working group will be meeting in Cartagena, and I'm going to be briefing, you know, others that are interested in the discussions. From a internal perspective, we're going to be conducting a ICANN DNS operations and LRoot contingency exercise sometime in Q1. And this may be useful. It's not necessarily related to a DNS cert, but you're starting to look at risks to our own infrastructure, which include our DNS operations function, and providing a after-action report, doing an exercise based on best practices, and I think that's good that we'll be reporting about that. Hopefully, we'll have some detailed report at the ICANN meeting in March 2011, and I went ahead and listed the regions where the next three meetings will be held in 2011, so in Asia-Pacific in June, and in Africa in October of 2011. Finally, last slide, just shows some of the upcoming activities that the security team has within the next couple months. As I mentioned, this Joint Security Stability Analysis Working Group is going to be meeting in Cartagena. They're working on a charter. Some of you that are interested may be able to participate in that group. In addition, the Affirmation of Commitments Review of SSR will be kicking off later this week, and will be probably going through the next couple of months. From a team perspective, we're participating in cyber exercises, helping support the new gTLD program, the IDN ccTLD fast track, and then working with others on IPv6 introduction and in a variety of other areas. There's also the next key ceremony for DNSSEC is November 1st, and I'll be participating in that. And I'm ready for questions if there are any, but hopefully I've made it clear that we want to continue working with the community, not push a DNS cert, and taking a step back to get more data before this type of concept is brought forward.
Thank you,
Patrick. Do we have any questions from the audience for Patrick? Yes?
Maybe you can stand here.
Hi, Patrick. It's Curtis from Autonomica NetNode, who runs one of the root servers. You said in your presentation that this was that ICANN had, can I say, shifted your focus to support community efforts to do the DNS cert rather than the original business paper that was calling for a multi-million dollar setup of a DNS cert within ICANN. I haven't actually seen this community described anywhere yet except the ICANN organized workshops. Can you say anything about what people you're seeing, what groups are actually asking for a DNS cert and what roles they're describing? Because I haven't seen anything except inside a framework of ICANN being described yet.
So the DNS cert concept was discussed at the SSR symposium in Georgia Tech as something that could be useful for bringing the community together in addressing incidents and events involving the DNS. I guess, are you asking for which particular? You know, this has been from the security community and some smaller CCTLDs were involved in this workshop. You know, the concept paper was developed many months ago and published. There was feedback received in the comment period from some certs. So computer emergency response teams noted that it would be a good thing for a DNS cert. We also received multiple comments that ICANN needs to do more work to define what the problem is, and you know, we're listening. So we are taking a step back to get better definition around the problem set and not push a DNS cert as a solution.
So when you said that ICANN is working on supporting community efforts, you are waiting for some of these certs and smaller CCTLDs who need this to establish a formal group, and you will see how ICANN can finance or support this? Is that?
Yeah, I think the working group that I mentioned is going to take a step back as well and look at what are the issues and all potential solutions, including or not including a DNS cert, and what might be the best way forward for collaborative efforts at you know, providing some kind of function. And that may be something totally different than a DNS cert. It could be something else. So we want to support that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Last question from my side is that from the beginning as a manager of a CCTLD, I got the feeling that this is coming top down from ICANN CEO and not bottom up and multi-stakeholder. Just throwing into the room, let's have a DNS cert on a global way. And now we discuss mostly, let's discuss what we need. Am I wrong?
I think there's been a perception that the document and the concept have been introduced from the top down. I'm not sure if that's exactly accurate, but at this point, arguing or looking back at what was done in the past, I think is less useful than trying to have constructive discussion for bringing this forward. You know, Rob's tried to make it very clear that he wants to support community efforts going forward. So I think it's more useful to focus on what can be done rather than looking back at how the DNS cert concept was introduced.
Thank you. do we have more questions from the audience? Otherwise, I would like to thank you for going up early and being an early bird and try to help us here in Sweden understanding DNS cert and the security issues and the parts where ICANN is working on. Thank you very much, Patrick. There's a present here lying in Stockholm if you would ever pass by. Let's see if we can send it to you.
Yeah, I wish I could be there. This looks like a great event, and I wish you good luck for the rest of the next couple of days.
Thank you. Goodbye. Yeah.
Bye.
Ge oss en minut eller två så kommer nästa från Tyskland som är Peter Koch som är Senior Researcher Technology till DINIC. DINIC är då med 13-14 miljoner domäner världens största landstoppdomän. Peter Koch jobbar inte bara på DINIC men han är också väldigt aktiv inom ORG tror jag. Som är en av de organisationer som också skulle kunna vara en DNS-cert.
Så det blir intressant att se vad han tycker. Tycker ni att det funkar på det här sättet? För det är en liten test som vi gör ändå. Att kalla in folk från hela världen och diskutera ett tema.
Jag kör ju Skype som inte använder DNS då förstås.
Nästa talare saknar såklart kamera. Och då är det ljudet som...
Okej, okay, ja, men det... Som, det funkar med bara ljud också. Ja.
Man kanske ser oss, men ser man
det var hans presentation. Hans presentation.
Där är du kan upprätta en uppkoppling.
Hello Peter, can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
give us a minute, then we'll. Connect you so the whole audience can hear you. We don't have your picture, so we can't see you, but I said that you were a very handsome guy. Yes, you can thank me later. So, Peter, Peter?
Yeah.
Yes. Now you're on. We had a presentation from Curtis as an opener, and after that we had Patrick Jones from ICANN telling us the story behind why they push for a DNS cert. And the last remarks were mostly that they were open for feedback and ideas from the community what was needed. I know you've been involved at least in the discussions and you've been following the DNS cert quite closely, and I also said to the audience that you're active in ORG. I have the presentation beside me, so what you need to tell me is when I have to flip the slide. Is that fine?
Okay, thanks, Daniel.
Okay, let's start then.
Okay, so let's stick with the title for a second. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about DNS failure, or actually challenging the question a bit, maybe. And that's why I chose the subtitle, Meeting the Right Expectations, or maybe I could have said Framing the Expectations. One of the reasons is, the next slide, please.
Yes?
One of the reasons... that these expectations need to be framed a bit in my opinion is that when we're talking about the DNS or failures of the DNS and risks to the DNS,
it turns out that
a quite diverse risk sometimes. So what kind of failures are we talking about? And what I'd like to suggest is we look at what components this DNS, this domain or system is actually made of, and what failure modes exist for these components, and how they are already addressed, if they are, what the risks are. So, as I guess most people, if not all, know, DNS is first of all, it's an abstract concept somehow, so there's a hierarchical namespace, and that of course is of little value when it comes from applications that make use of the namespace, and they have the risk with that, and we'll go through this in a couple of minutes. Then, of course, there's the only way protocol, which is again somewhere between an abstract level thing happening in the ether and software that actually makes use and communicates using this underwire protocol. When we have software that interacts with each other across the globe, we have operations in place, and of course we have operational reality or interdependencies, as I called it here. And so far everything covers the DNS as a technical person would probably understand it in the first slide, with packets on the wire and that namespace. But of course, there's also the side that feeds everything into the DNS, which is the provisioning of the registry side. And there's policy involved here, unavoidable and necessary, of course. And to close the picture a bit, there's, of course, ongoing research and education. And all of these, and maybe more components, make up the DNS, and let's look at them in a bit more detail. The next slide, number three, please. So let's look at the namespace and how applications make use of that. The hierarchical namespace faces a challenge, or has been facing a challenge since more or less the very beginning. The main challenge is scalability. You know that the .com zone is reaching 4-digit millions. .NET is in the tens of millions, and .de for that matter is approaching 14 million domains. So a flat namespace, but this all still works. The other question is that of addressability, or maybe you should have named vulnerability, or should have not only existed in English. Can everything that needs a name be given a name? Can names be distinguished? And pending some considerations about internationalization that I will address later, it turns out that this part of the DNS is working well. All the challenges have been addressed, so there's no need for the emergency. More interesting probably are the applications that make use of that namespace. Traditionally, it's a mapping function. Some domain name is mapped to an address or something that is an infrastructure identifier, a name or something. Recently, in development in the ITF and elsewhere, people have started to use service location and service discovery through the DNS. So instead of just having a mapping function, people are trying to walk around with the DNS tree, which has operational challenges, because usually DNS was built in a way that we know where to ask for, what name to ask for, and that there was a bit of variance in what you could ask for. With these known challenges, old issues come up. If you look at the RFC number there, RFC 1535, that is in the late 90s somehow. There were already issues that came walking around in the domain name tree and doing new things instead of just asking for it. So these challenges are there, and they remain there, and they come up every now and then again. Another question of whether DNS is facing challenges is whether to put data, big data blocks into the DNS, or just pointers to data, or say URIs. Maybe those are resource identifiers as we move them from our web browser web address bars. And of course, last but not least, the presentation layer of the internationalization, IDNs of course, face some challenges. Some may not have to be in the DNS itself. All of this is under continued consideration within the ITF, and since the protocol development, this is where this has to go. Just recently, the Internet Architecture Board, which is the strategic oversight, the strategic oversight body, has issued another document about that. So there is some risk there, which can pose operational consequences, but it's my belief that this is well addressed with the open community in the engineering task force. Next slide, please. So let's dig a bit deeper, it's looking at the protocol that's basically the on-the-wire protocol. So what is going around through the wires and over the air. The demand system basically, and you know that, uses UDP and it's really lightweight, which makes it a good handler sometimes for every application that wants to distribute information. It is redundant, it is resilient, and it's largely fault-tolerant, meaning that misconfigurations in one part of the domain tree do not necessarily affect other parts of the tree. That is, if there is an outage, even at the top-level domain level, other parts of the domain tree aren't really affected. However, as a basic design feature, or today we might say mistake, there's the lack of data origin authentication, but then we know that DNSSEC is more or less around the corner, and again, you know that because .SE has been the first top-level domain to be signed. An experience that people have made there is, of course, that this additional authentication or authenticity comes at the cost of reduced fault tolerance. And this is one of the risks that we're facing with the DNSSEC, and looking at recent events, there were a couple of the top-level domains having issues with the DNSSEC. So Google was among them, I must admit. But most of these issues had to do with the introduction of DNSSEC and some operational issues or software issues or a combination of those. So there is a trade-off between added security, operational complexity, and such. The underlying protocol is the IPS responsibility, and the operational impact is also directly in the IPS, but also in those boosts. And all we can do here is coordinating on the parties involved, which is happening as we speak, and addressing things that we learn from each other. So unfortunately, that also means learning from each other's mistakes, provided we do communicate, be sure. On the protocol side, now we're approaching the moon again a bit more, there's the presentation issue, or I should say, internationalized domain names. Way back then, domain names were just protocol identifiers, and some people say by way of accident, they have been exposed to moons. So the basic properties that we have is that they usually move the world for separate aspects. You can't express similarity, you can't do fuzzy matching and such. Yeah, there are features, but a human reader of today's and a user of today's internet, of course, isn't really willing to accept these constraints because that's not what they're used to in real life. These issues of IDNs and similarity or variance, as are largely context dependent. DNS hierarchy is offering another challenge, actually, because hierarchy supports delegation of responsibility. There's no inheritance. You can't really dictate from the side of the technology that something we would consider equal at some level of the tree, maybe the top level. So this is simplified Chinese or traditional Chinese, I think they ought to be equivalent. You can't really enforce that all the way down until you reach the second third of the tree levels. This is also the responsibility of the IETF, but the so-called sameness or equivalent issue, has some issues to deal with. Basically, strikes with the lack of fluent specified requirements. People want things defined in terms of usage. I want to have the same sign or a similar sign displayed in my web browser, no matter what I select from a set of similar. That's nothing the domain system was used for, sorry, was designed for. And to that extent, the DNS might actually fail, but it might fail to meet expectations that may or may not even solve outside the DNS. Again, this is basically a design, protocol design issue, not so much operational and not so much a order for emergency. We do have software, and of course software has bugs, not only DNS software, but also registry software, and again, it would be too embarrassing for me to go into details, but these software bugs, of course, are helpful. Very important here is that there's diversity in place in the operational reality, and most of the top-level domains use off-the-shelf software take care of diversity by using different products in different locations, or by using Anycast, by using outsourcing, by combining different service providers and such. So failure of a certain software will not affect the availability of their service as a whole. Then there's another issue that software can pose, that software can initiate swarm effects. A bit earlier I talked about failures that were introduced by the newly deployed DNSSEC, and one of these failures was that the Zorba software had kind of an aggressive strategy to deal with validation failures, and the Zorba software was doing that not only in one place but in multiple places, so the accumulated volume of DNS queries originated by the software posed some real operational challenges. This is something that one can't really foresee 100%. So it's important that operators, analysts, and researchers do interact with each other to come together on an ad hoc basis if they need. And the good news is this is all happening. This is happening in the RTF, it's happening with the war, which is the operations analysis, and also the center of the local group that are doing such a thing. And the various network operators groups, countrywide or continent-wide. And as a well, an interesting meta issue, this is not one organization that's dealing with all these issues. So there's little diversity on the organizational level when it comes to who's dealing with these issues. Sometimes it's duplication, but it's also very important to maintain different angles to these problems. Okay, so operational reality, I guess I covered most of this. One part that is still important here is the last bullet item, trusted communication between peers and trusted communication in a bottom-up way. So people with each other, people know each other's skills and challenges, and can talk to each other in an open way on a community basis. Again, this is exercised very successfully in various level of operators groups, peer reading lists for the IDF files. Next slide, that should be number 6, provisioning and policy. Risks. On that side, provisioning is mostly standardized. Most registries use EPP, certainly something different, but maybe similar, like we have our own provisioning protocol. But nonetheless, diversity is in the details anyway. The provisioning side is key for the security of the user when it comes to real world challenges. We're all talking about DNSSEC cache poisoning. Luckily enough, this cache poisoning is exploited too much these days, but the users fear if you and then that they use their domain somehow. So provisioning, securing provisioning is very important. But again, there is nice diversity there, because we have the registry model, the triple R model, and that provides for a range of different price ranges, quality ranges, and so on and so forth. So the end user can actually choose and trade price versus security. Sometimes they are lucky and they get good price and secure operations. But of course, there is a choice to implement. So there is already diversity in place. And basic operational configurations just suggest that these operators secure their operations. Policy, of course, poses some risks, I should say. Basically, it suggests dictates somehow what can be provisioned, so what domains can be registered in what circumstances and what conditions. Policy making, of course, needs to accept cooperation of strengths and those who are technology that's the next world. Based on that, we like to have IDNs and construct similar IDNs in a similar way, which is probably doesn't explain to you, but very difficult to explain to the computer. So the challenge here is to be to take into account the basic properties of the underlying component of the problem, as I said. There is no similarity between S. It's only ask very specific questions and give a very specific response. So trying to drive some of this innovation through the DNS is actually really posing a risk here, because again, expectations may might not be met, and that will or can be perceived as a failure of the DNS. And it's of course important to react to that, to help solve these issues, but also show the way that this is not necessarily happening in the DNS. And next slide. There's really coming to the end, that is research and education. Innovation and reaction to incidents, that's what research is for. So we have the proactive part that is trying to detect risks, explore that, explain that, how would be that in advance. Examples of recent past are, of course, I should have mentioned Derek Kaminsky and his research work that led to the so-called Kaminsky bug, but also the root scaling and the introduction of the signed root, the so-called deliberately unverified root zone, reports that were prepared by Orr again. Derek Kaminsky has collected ad hoc analysis. And what can be seen here is that over the last few years, there has been an increased level of attention from both academia and operators or applied scientists. And organizations that are working with this are CAIDA or the System Symposium, Internet Society Conference. There are various measurement workshops that deal with DNS. And this role where I think that the attention and the amount of research that has gone into DNS on the co-collaborations level has been really increased over the past years, and there's a wide variety of researchers doing this, and there's also, and it's also very important, there's a good feedback loop into operations through these various network operators who are just having a research communication event somehow, just now in Stockholm. That is right for the European region, in addition to the researchers at this point, where they talk to each other. And that brings me mostly to the end, which is there's also education. And education is there to help prevent the events. To help do that, to keep us, like I said, nobody, nothing is able to do that. And education works by spreading news, bringing people the up-to-date technical information, what are the latest trends. But it's also very important to bring people together. So the social aspect of the education is not to be underestimated. Again, to establish contact between peers, which then help operators communicate in a trusted environment. And again, there's a variety of organizations and venues, the ITS, the Internet Societies, IGF Fellows, the Network Star Resource Center, which is going out in various emerging economies, tutorials to talk about DNS tech, about DNS operations. And similar to that, there is the main machine programs. One CMU registry is talking to a couple of others, doing them the latest news, if they don't have the resources to send their staff to all these international events that some of us can afford to go to. Okay, so can we talk about failure? That's slightly debated. Can we really talk about failure? Well, I could say yes, there are several examples of outages, different level of pain, so to speak. I have just mentioned a few. But on the other hand, there have been efforts, and sometimes very well conservative, of a very broad set of organizations that actually react, analyze issues, and make recommendations. The community is really showing a good track record of learning from these incidents or from failures that are in one place, so that the sheer repetition of similar problems is, again, not be repeated, but can be prevented to be the best possible way. Failures have to do with false assumptions, which is just to give you a few examples. When you send content through the DNS, blocking, think of that, and yeah, maybe the DNS is sustainable, but again, this is not a risk to the DNS or even the DNS. It is something that occurs because the DNS is used in a way that it was not designed to. The presentation issues, user experience topic, again, people may argue that this is a failure here, but the challenge, so the solution to these challenges might just be also there, as well as this again is not only the risk to IAM for an operational challenge, and of course it's very important to address the necessity of people to move pages and address, web pages and addresses in their own world script. But this doesn't really pose a risk to the DNS. And again, names and identifiers are just that. At least they are designed to be just that. They don't have inherent semantics. There is no meaning in it, even though there's a meaning which tries to define it. These issues are challenges that need to be addressed, but they don't pose any risk to the operations. So, I guess in essence, the online summary is that there's already a diverse set of organizations that is addressing most of all of the risks of the DNS that we can face today, or even those that we are facing tomorrow, looking at the applications that they try to exploit. Oh, that's too negative, I'm sorry. To use the DNS for even more new features. But I for one feel that we're in good shape here. People are talking to each other in a mesh way, not top down. We have good bottom up procedures, we have top communication across different constituencies, researchers, operators, vendors, and so that's basically it.
Thank you, Peter. Unfortunately, we had the feeling that you were taking a shower quite near to the German Autobahn while you were doing a presentation. It was something with the connection. But the audience has been very patient and listened. It was very helpful that we had your slides. we already are past our time, so we're eating into the lunch right now. Quick question from my side. Do you believe in a global DNS cert?
Well, the short answer is no. Just to be provided.
Peter, now the shower is very extensive.
So, now
that's, I don't know if it's steered by emotion. But the moment I mentioned to a DNS cert, we had a water flow coming in. We tried the last time. Do you believe in a DNS cert or not?
No, I guess I've tried to motivate that the DNS has so many angles that one could say, on one hand, it is already globally addressed by a diverse set of organizations, which is the right thing to do if you have such a complex topic. On the other hand, many and many impacts are really of local effect and better dealt with on a local basis or on a constituency basis rather than a single entity trying to subsume and duplicate efforts that we know have been working very well over the last couple of years.
Thank you, Peter. Have a nice day.
Bye.
Ledsen att det blev lite dålig kvalitet, men det är bra att vi kunde använda er lite grann som guinea pig idag. Se hur det fungerade. Temat var då hot på DNS och om man kan lösa det genom att ha en global DNS-cert-organisation. Så vi från .se är väldigt tveksamma att man kan lösa det på det sättet. Precis som flera säger, det finns väldigt många spelare, väldigt många olika anledningar varför det kan gå fel och det finns troligtvis inte en lösning som vi kan hitta på så att det blir mycket bättre. Så det här sitter vi allihopa i samma båt. För vi måste hjälpa varandra, vi måste hitta varandra och vi måste tillsammans hitta en lösning när det väl händer. Så jag tror det är väldigt mycket också i Sverige att vi måste ha en väldigt tajt och bra organisation med de spelare som kan hjälpa till när det väl händer. Tack!
Patrik Jörns presentation.